Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Yellow. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at How Stuff Works. Sitting next to me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hello from the world of tomorrow!
Oh, no. You know, actually, it reminds me of a line from Spaceballs. Even in the future, nothing works.
Right. So we're going to talk about what the hell happened to the future.
Yeah, because, you know, we were talking about fun ideas for podcasts, and we decided we wanted to do something really fun. Like, you know, all those, you know, the articles and the Tex Avery
cartoons
yeah. About the house of the future and the dog of the future and the, you know,
the all kitchen the cool of tomorrow.
Yeah. And the Jetsons and all the cool stuff we were going to have.
Yeah. What the heck happened to that? Also,
nothing.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
I have a theory that the future exists on a spectrum. And on one end of the spectrum, you have the Jetsons, where it's the happy future with the, you know, helpful robots and the flying cars. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got George Orwell's nightmarish dystopia, where everything is very locked down and all the technology is used to keep the proletariat in line. And that's the spectrum of the future. And I kind of want to see by the end of this podcast where we think we are on that spectrum. Like, are we closer to the Orwell or are we closer to the shiny, happy Jetsons?
You know, honestly, I have to say, and this is just a personal side, that I, you know, like on the Ouija board, when you start wondering whether somebody is moving the thing around intentionally, I have the feeling you're going to steer this direction in one particular, you know, way, but I'm not going to get there.
I will say there is a middle ground. It's called the Terminator. So the Terminator is in between Orwellian and Jetsons. It's actually, I think, closer to Jetsons because it requires sentient robots.
All right, then. Well, speaking of robots.
Yeah, we'll go straight to robots.
Okay.
So where's my personal robot? Where's my robot butler?
You want Rosie.
I want, well, you know, I'll settle for Rosie.
Well, she's got like, really the trash compactor in her tummy.
That's
right?
True.
Yeah,
that's
true. Pretty nice.
Yeah, where's Rosie?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the closest thing we might have is maybe Osimo.
Osimo's pretty close. Osimo is Honda's robot.
Yeah.
It was the neatest thing about Osimo recently is that it learned to run. Before it could just walk really fast. Running is defined as the moment when you're propelling yourself forward and both feet leave contact with the ground for at least a split second.
Wow.
Yeah, Osimo can do that.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. It was, by the way, that was one of my first articles here, was how Osimo works.
You know, I knew that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was before you were here.
Yes, but I've been told many times about all the articles you've ever written.
I still have the video CD at my desk, and I occasionally watch it because it brings a smile to my face. Yeah, Asimo's not much of a butler, but he is a pretty cool robot. He's
and
not sentient.
He can conduct.
He can conduct. He did conduct an orchestra.
Yes.
But he can't make decisions. He can't do really anything on his own. You have to pre-program a lot of information in Asimo for him to work. He can recognize certain obstacles that are in his path and plan for them and move out of the way, and he can climb stairs and things like that.
Unlike a Dalek.
But he can't, right. But he can't decide on things on his own. He can't make up his mind.
Right.
So there's lack of sentience. We can talk about other robots too. I mean, there's the Roomba.
Oh, that's true.
You know, there are these.
Ibo?
Helpful little robots that can do things like simple tasks. But again, we're not, you know, it's kind of a far cry from Rosie.
Yeah. And although, you know, Rosie vacuumed too.
That's true.
You know, I was thinking about the robotic critters like Ibo, yep. Sony's dog.
Sure.
And Pleo.
Pleo, yeah, who, really cool.
Who, you know, it may not think, but it is pretty scary. I don't advocate you do this, but if you really want to, if you're really twisted enough to do this, go online to YouTube. And there are videos of people torturing Pleo. And it screams. And it's really awful.
It'll keep you up at night.
It's sad. And I don't know exactly why they threw that in there, but it is really depressing.
All right, well, staying on the robots and trying to move away from – well, actually, this isn't moving away from depressing at all.
No.
But Android Army robots, what the heck are those? We don't have any of those.
Cybermen?
Yeah,
the
Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
If you will. We don't really have any of those. We do have military robots.
That's true. That's true. That's
but they look more like kind of miniature tanks, really.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The miniature tanks, they tend to be used mainly for reconnaissance or rescue missions. You send them into areas that you know are dangerous. Either they're perhaps landmines or other explosive devices, or the area you're sending it in is structurally unsound. Sure. You wouldn't want to necessarily send a human being in there, so you send a robot in instead. It's a lot easier to replace a robot. It's just money, right? It's just money and parts. Oh, it's so much better to use a robot in those cases. But again, we're talking about robots that don't really have a lot of autonomous functionality. They can't really make decisions on their own. Now, you could program them where you could program a sentry robot where it essentially fires on anything that comes in its field of vision. But again, that's not really making a decision. It's just recognize a target and fire at it.
True. I mean, that's what the unmanned aerial vehicles do. Mm-hmm. They're in missions in the Middle East and Iraq and Afghanistan. There's actually a group of people here in the United States who are operating those. They're not robots, I guess. Technically, they're more like remote controlled airplanes.
Right.
They are remote controlled airplanes. But I mean, they've got the cameras on them and somebody's moving them. And that's essentially what these other devices are doing. The bomb squad robots and the military robots that go in and test for landmines and stuff like that.
Right,
so they're
not
really doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Not like
so
a big track that you
still
send into
far, far away from autonomous robots. Some people would say that's a good thing because, you know, Terminator bad in general.
Okay. Flying cars.
Where's our flying car? Michael Jackson was supposed to buy one back in the 80s. You remember hearing that story?
No.
You never heard that story?
I never heard that story.
Oh, my gosh.
I heard other stories about Michael Jackson, but that's not one of the ones I heard.
One of the stories about Michael Jackson, one of the you know, I mean, it's a little crazy, but not like, woohoo. So one of the stories about Michael Jackson was that he was interested in buying a flying car. There was this couple of different inventors at the time who were talking about the possibility of a flying car, and it was just around the corner. This is the 1980s. And Michael Jackson said he wanted to be the first person to buy that. You know, that's not surprising. You've got celebrities who buy the first something of whatever, like Schwarzenegger bought the first civilian Humvee. So, I mean, it does happen.
And Stevie Wonder bought the first book reader for the blind, right, from Ray Kurzweil.
It's
heard
amazing
about
that was right off the top of your head.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's not unusual, but the problem is that the flying cars just haven't really, I hesitate to use the word surfaced.
Well, we have an article called How Flying Cars Will Work by Kevin Bonsor.
That's true.
And you can look at that. There are flying cars.
Right.
They basically used fans, right, giant fans.
Kind of giant hovercraft really is what they end up being.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And
it's not a Back to the Future style flying car.
Not so much.
No, you're hovering. You're not really flying, I'd say.
But you know, George Jetson makes it look so easy, and
he does.
That's the problem is with the flying cars is the one that we all eventually come to when we start thinking about how nice it would be when you take your flying car to work and you're the only one in the air. And if everyone has flying cars,
everyone's in the air.
That's right.
How do you legislate that? How do you control that?
What happens when one of them gives out when your neighbor is flying over your house?
Yeah, the entire sky becomes the road.
Yeah, it's kind of
there's no single pathway to follow. That's one of the things about, yeah, you know, car travel makes it easier to handle than flight, is because, you know, you've got very limited places where people can go. You can, yeah, legislate that. You can control that. How do you control it when everyone's got their own miniature airplane?
Apparently where we're going, we do need roads.
Yeah, apparently so. I mean, if nothing else, we probably need computer controlled vehicles to take the human element out of it, because just thinking about everyone owning their own flying car is, yeah, kind of frightening.
Yeah.
There are some that are out there. The M200G Volantir. Have you heard about this?
I've heard a little of it.
It looks like a little flying saucer.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen videos of it, and it's pretty neat. And they're talking about the possibility of manufacturing these on a mass scale. It all depends on how many people order them.
Right.
So it's kind of a catch-22. They can't make them cheaper until people start buying them, but people aren't buying them because they're not cheap.
Right.
So that's Segway. Probably where we're, you know, we're kind of going to be stuck on this. I think we're just going to see those as kind of, you know, novelty vehicles, not like your regular kind of vehicle.
All right. I got another one for you.
Okay, go ahead. Shoot.
Weather control.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, in the future, we're going to control the weather. So
right.
Where's that?
There have been some attempts. China, yeah, tried it.
Oh, yeah. Another article we have on the site.
Right. They tried to seed clouds to try and make it rain so that it would rain in distant locations in China, so that the rain would not eventually make its way to Beijing, where the Olympics were being held. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. How did that work out? I didn't follow up on it, so I actually don't know. We'll have to look into that and see if they were actually successful. Now, granted, this is very primitive weather control.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of semi-successful from what I understand.
Yeah.
The point is to seed clouds with silver iodide.
Right.
And essentially what it does, if you know a little bit about how rain works, the moisture in the air in the clouds gets so heavy that it can't stay up in the clouds anymore and falls down as rain. Well, the point is to give the water molecules something to condense on, so
yeah,
that they go ahead and fall. So yeah, you make it rain before,
earlier than it would have.
Yeah, exactly.
And try and get it to rain out before it hits whatever. Yeah. And I mean, this idea does have some merit. You could think, well, the problem is that it requires that there be moisture in the air already.
Right.
So you can't just say like, oh, we can solve the drought problem. No, you kind of need clouds with moisture in them above the drought area before you can actually cause it to rain.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, we're still ways off on the weather control, too. Lunar base. How are we doing with that lunar base?
Well, surprisingly, well, we don't have one.
Oh.
That's the short answer.
Shucks.
But we're going to have one.
Awesome. I know that NASA's really interested in it.
NASA is really interested in it. And part of the reason that President George W. Bush was interested enough to say, hey, let's do this and actually get the ball sort of semi-rolling, is that they want to use it as sort of a jumping off point to get to Mars.
Yeah, it would be kind of a rest stop on the way to any other distant location.
So when you get just past the moon, you can say, you should have gone when you're back at the moon.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, look, we were just at the moon.
Right.
Why didn't you go then? Yeah, it's kind of the truck stop of the universe, or at least the solar system.
Right.
And yeah, NASA does have plans to return to the moon. There's actually an amazing video on NASA's site. It's very inspirational, about using the moon as a base for that kind of thing. And just a base in general, using it for everything from astronomy to, other scientific experiments. And it's we got to see this video here at How Stuff Works in person. We had someone from NASA come to How Stuff Works and show this video. This might have been before you joined. I'm not sure.
I think it is.
It was fascinating. The man from NASA showed us the video, and it was really, really inspirational. And it is available on NASA's site. I highly recommend people check it out. Because it gets you excited about the space program, which is, you know, not only is it not a small task, it's also vitally important for NASA's funding. They True. Have to get this kind of excitement in order to get the interest from Congress to get the funding they need to do these projects. That's why you start seeing these private projects pop up too, like the XPRIZE Foundation and Google.
That's true.
You know, they have a contest for people, teams to send up a lunar rover up. So this would be a robotic rover, not a manned mission.
Really? A robot, you say?
Yes. A robot rover to the moon to prove that private companies could do this just as well as a government group could. And India just launched its first unmanned mission to the moon.
That's true.
So, so there is a renewed interest. So a lunar community is not outside the realm of believability, and it'll still be a couple decades off probably. But, so we're not there yet, but we're still heading there. At least we haven't gotten off track. And, you know, you mentioned Tex Avery cartoons at the beginning.
Yeah.
I went back and watched one, The Car of Tomorrow. Now, we should stress that these cartoons were meant just as kind of poking fun at the idea of what the future would look like.
Well, that's true, because this was – it was actually sort of a reaction to all the articles about, you know, what's going to happen in, you know, 1950s America and what's going to happen in the year 2000.
Right.
You know,
so these were meant specifically to poke fun at that. Yeah. They were just meant for laughs. They were not meant to be taken seriously. And yet there are a couple of them that have come true.
Really?
Or at least are in the prototype stage. Yeah.
There was
one car. One of the cars was a car that could have rotating tires to solve the parallel parking problem. Right? So that you would be driving and then your tires would rotate so that they were now perpendicular and you would just slide in sideways directly into the parallel parking spot.
I was going to say, aren't all car tires rotating?
Well, rotating.
But you mean the other direction.
Right, exactly. Not just, yes. They could change right. the axes there.
I didn't want to, you know, break it to you that.
Right. Hey, guess what? We have that. Well, there's a prototype now. It's actually a car concept. It's not even a prototype, but it's called the NASA car concept. And the idea here is that the tires would move so that you're no longer facing forward. They actually face to the left and right so that you could roll immediately to your right and parallel park without having to do that nasty little shuffle maneuver.
Yeah, I hate that, actually.
Yeah. So, that was one that was just meant as a joke in this Tex Avery cartoon, and yet someone's really working on a way of potentially addressing
Making
this issue.
Happen. Yeah.
And there's another one. There was a folding car where when you get to where you're going, it folds up into a tiny little square and you put it in your pocket. Okay, so we're not really going to that level. I mean, there's some other issues that we would have to address before that.
What, like repealing the laws of physics?
Exactly. That would be a big one. But there's the idea of the city car from MIT, which is a folding car. It's not meant as a personal vehicle. You would kind of rent it for your time while you're at the car, while you're in the city, rather. So you go to the city, you rent this little car, and you drive it around. And when you return it, it folds into a line, kind of like the way shopping carts fold up to each other. So you would actually come up and you take the one on the end. Obviously, when you rented one, you take whichever one was on the end, drive it around, drive it into the little docking station, and it would fold up with the rest. So, again, you know, not as far-fetched as Tex Avery thought, probably.
All right.
And there was another one. There was a boat car, a car that was part car, part boat, that could drive through nasty, nasty weather. We could talk about the scuba car. Scuba car. We've got an article on that. It's the car that's a submarine car. Can go underwater. So again, Tex Avery, you know what? Not that far off.
There you go.
Strangely enough.
Yeah, you know, he wasn't the only animator who was interested in the future. There were quite a few Disney pieces on that. As a matter of fact, it was a big thing. Well, Tomorrowland, you know, in Disneyland and at Walt Disney World, and Disney the Moon, which is opening next year. Okay, maybe.
Wait,
not.
Seriously?
No, it's in the future.
Dang. I was going to start planning my trip.
It's in a giant dome. there was an episode of Disneyland, which was the show Disneyland.
Right.
Called Magic Highway USA. And I actually watched this before it was pulled down for copyright infringement.
Right.
Called The Road Ahead. And it talked about color-coded expressways and cars that you could basically get in and it would take you to where you're going. And longtime How Stuff Works podcast listeners might remember I brought this up on a Stuff You Should Know episode in which Josh Clark and I talked about his article. Will there be a new kind of taxi cab in the future? Well, personal rapid transport is actually a form of this. And what it would do is it's like a little car that you get in. And it doesn't look like a little car. It looks very futuristic. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise. But it's on a track. And you say, okay, I want to go to, and you give it the address for work. Well, the little car gets on the track, and it's coordinated with all the other cars. So it basically knows not to go too fast or too slow, and it takes you to where you're going. When you get out, you leave it, and it's not really your, when I say personal, it's not yours, but it's basically just you, and it takes you where you want to go. And it would require a lot of infrastructure,
right,
as you can imagine, because it would have to be a track going to everybody's house and every
location. Yeah.
But
it's kind of like the Minority Report. I remember there were vehicles in the Minority Report that were very much like that. They would even go up and down buildings.
Yeah. Yeah. But and it's being tested out in a couple places. And
that's pretty cool.
And apparently it's very cost efficient as far as building out the infrastructure. It's less than building light rail. So
when it comes to where the hell's my future, at least the car stuff is falling into line pretty well.
Yeah.
As floating cities, not so much.
No.
No, I read about this a few years ago. The idea was proposed by a man named Norman Nixon of the Freedom Ship, which was an enormous ship. It could hold 50,000 people, and it was a floating community. It's not meant as like a cruise ship or anything like that. You would actually live there, and there'd be workspace and living space. And visiting his website, seems they ran into a few problems. They trusted some people with their money that maybe they should not have trusted. and they trusted some engineers that maybe they should not have trusted. And at any rate, this dream is still well within the dream phase. It doesn't sound to me like they've made a whole lot of progress. They're still determined to try and make it work. But I think it's going to be another few decades before we hear anything firm about the Freedom Ship if it doesn't just disappear altogether.
Well, the Freedom Ship does sound exciting and new.
Nice.
I'd like to come aboard. They're expecting me.
I have one more, but I wanted to ask if you had any before I did my final one.
Okay. Well, I was thinking of a couple.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go ahead.
Quick ones. I'll make them quick. You know, there was this thing that was proposed a couple hundred years ago called the Mundaneum by Paul Otlet, and it would basically be a giant catalog of information stored on, you know, essentially punch cards, cataloged cards.
Sure.
Not really punch cards like in the, later on. Although, Vannevar Bush, who, was one of the government's top scientists in the United States for a long time, worked with the atomic bomb project and a lot of other different projects. He had this idea of a machine called the Memex, or Memex, I guess. It would be like you could scan things in, documents in, and save them all on microfilm. So you could have like a giant reader on your desk, and you could pull up information from anywhere.
I think I see where this is going.
I mean, have you heard anything like this?
Well, it's what we pretty much do our research on now, huh? It actually well exceeded
paper?
Their expectations. Do you research on paper? Tree killer.
No. Of course, you all by now who have downloaded this podcast on the internet know what I'm talking about. But there you go. There's an instance in which we've actually surpassed both of these scientists' expectations, and I'm sure that both of them would have, if they had lived to see it, would have been very pleased. Actually, Vannevar Bush lived into the internet age, but only very slightly. So, you know, he would probably be pretty darn impressed
with
what's going on.
Sounds like it.
And, of course, you know, there's the Monsanto House of the Future, to mention another Disney
nice.
Term.
Yes.
Of course, we have the, different modern furniture.
Right.
You know, but really that's not.
And home
so
automation
much.
Has made some progress, though not to the point
true.
Where arms come out of the wall and make your dinner for you.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the little mechanical arms to come shave me in the morning
right.
while I'm eating my toast in front of the mirror.
Instead, we just have like temperature control and lights and things like that.
Yeah,
we still
Which
got
is sort
to
of
go.
House of the Future-ish. I think that, you know, the little arms were more cartoony, maybe Jetsony.
I'm still holding out hope.
Okay.
Well, here's my final one. Here's how I know that the future really did fail us.
Okay.
Okay. It's because in the 1990s, we did not manage to shoot Khan off into space in exile aboard the Botany Bay.
Okay.
Khan is not out there. So Kirk cannot encounter Khan and then put him on SETI Alpha 5 and imprison him there and then encounter him again later in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which we all know was the best of the Star Trek movies, Next Generation included.
Okay, maybe I should switch back to stuff you should know. Maybe there's a slot.
I'm just saying, Khan!
All right, then.
Oh, boy, future, you really let me down there. All right. Well, you know what?
I have nothing I can say to that.
I think that's
it's going to make that any better.
Well, how about we go back? I'll tell you about that futuristic technology that really exists. I'm talking about liquid body armor.
Okay.
It's super neat stuff. I mean, we're talking about non-Newtonian fluids here. So these are fluids that when you make an impact, they don't behave like a normal liquid. Where, you know, you would just hit it and your hand just goes through. They actually stiffen up and they distribute the force so that you can take a shot, like literally take a shot from a gun, and it distributes the force so that it doesn't kill you, which is pretty much what body armor is supposed to do, right?
Right, except most of it isn't made out of cornstarch and water.
That's true. But you can read about the stuff that is made out of liquid in our article about how liquid body armor works. That's written by Tracy Wilson, one of our good friends here, a talented writer at How Stuff Works. It's live right now at howstuffworks.com, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.